Hey guys, coming up on Sports Spectrum, Ryan Saunders, Denver Nuggets assistant coach. He's the son of the late, great Flip Saunders and was actually a head coach with the Minnesota Timberwolves for a couple seasons before being let go in February of 21. But now he's an NBA champion. Denver Nuggets World Champions 2023. Ryan Saunders is an assistant coach there. He's got a lot to talk through here with his faith, a lot to talk through as far as having steadfastness, progress versus success, great stories and memories of his dad, and great stories and memories from a certain player, a Hall of Famer from the Minnesota Timberwolves that he grew up idolizing and hanging out with, one Kevin Garnett. It's coming up in just a second. First, I want to tell you about our Sports Spectrum magazine, 15% off a one-year subscription. That's what we want to offer you, exclusive to podcast listeners, for you to subscribe to what I think is the preeminent sports and faith magazine out there. It's the best thing that we do. And right now, the fall edition of the Sports Spectrum magazine is out. You can order it at sportsspectrum.com. When you're on the website, click the magazine icon at the top, and you'll be good to go to subscribe to a one-year or a two-year subscription to Sports Spectrum's magazine. The 15% off is for 1 year. Use the code PODCAST15 when you check out. When you go to sportsspectrum.com, order the magazine. Podcast 15 gets you 15% off a one-year subscription to the Sports Spectrum magazine. I promise you, you will love it. It's perfect for the kids. It's clean content. It's hard to find the sports world with clean content these days. That's what we want to offer. Of course, the gospel is presented as well. You can go to sportsspectrum.com and subscribe to the Sports Spectrum magazine today. Ryan Saunders with the Denver Nuggets. Hey, Ryan, what's up? Welcome to Sports Spectrum.
How you doing?
I'm good, man. It's good to see you on Zoom.
You as well.
We saw each other in person, I guess it was a little while ago, a few months ago, at the Christians Working in Sports Conference out in Minneapolis. But it's good to see you in person, man. I got to start with being an NBA champion. I think that's probably the question that everybody asks when they see you or come in contact with you. But has it sunk in yet what this past season was like? And certainly culminating with a championship.
Yeah, well, first off, Jay, I appreciate you having me on. I'm looking forward to talking a little bit and seeing where the conversations go. Being an NBA champion, I mean, I feel like, you know, it's relatively new, but whenever I've been introduced that way over the last few months here, I feel like it's something that's never going to get old. And, you know, it's one of those things, too, that, you know, all of a sudden, you know, people think you're a lot smarter than you might be, you know, now that you have the NBA champion tag on you. But it has sunk in a little bit in a sense of, you know, summer league, you go from the NBA finals to the NBA draft, which is literally the next week, was literally the next week for us. Then you go to NBA summer league, which was 10 days later for us. So you don't really get to catch your breath. But then once you get to NBA summer league and you start seeing other NBA folks around, and you're able to, you know, kind of have those casual conversations about how your seasons have gone, you know, it starts to sink in a little more. And, you know, I remember being on the other end of some of those conversations with, you know, guys from Golden State, guys from Milwaukee, guys from Toronto, in years past, guys from Cleveland, you know, and just kind of thinking like, wow, you know, hey, this, what do we have to do to somehow get to that point, you know, in our careers? And, you know, now you're kind of there. So now it's just about trying to get another one. And I think that's a crazy thing about the NBA calendar. It moves quickly where, you know, you're done with that. You celebrate a little bit or a lot of bit, depending on where the days and weeks go. And then you just try to move forward and try to do what you can to put your team in the best position next year.
Yeah. I want to go back to game 5 specifically at the end, because it was a close game and there was moments you know, you're trying to get the right calls on the court and you're trying to get the right, just trying to see the clock go down to zero. It feels like in those games, especially in the playoffs, everything takes a little bit longer to get there, but then the clock actually ticks zero and the confetti starts falling. Do you have a distinct memory of being on the court and celebrating in that moment?
Yeah, kind of. You know, it's funny the way you described it was spot on, because, it was one of those games. It wasn't where we were up, 20. We weren't up, 15, 10, even down the stretch by any means. We were fighting and clawing, and that's a unbelievably resilient Miami Heat team that you knew that was going to be an extremely difficult game. But it's just a huge credit to this team and the makeup of the players that we've had, just the way they were fighting. So, it was a very it almost felt very just business as usual type of a mindset within the group and during those timeouts, where it felt like everybody knew what we needed to do. We just understood it was going to be very difficult. Then obviously the buzzer sounds, and you feel like there's got to be more time, or there's something else you've been going for, whatever, 9 months. It feels like there's something else. But then you kind of look up and you see the confetti start falling, and you realize, you kind of realize, like, wow, this is we did it. This is it. And then they start passing out t-shirts and hats, and you look and they say NBA champions. And then you look up in the stands, and I find my wife, I find my kids, who are 4 and 2, and she did a masterful job, along with her mother, at that time, of making it where they could last through the game. They actually brought them at halftime on the off chance that we were able to close it out that game, so we could all kind of share in that experience. So just looking up there and seeing them, and seeing the kids looking up at the confetti and trying to grab at it, it was really, really special. And then you look at all the other the players who have wanted that for so long, other coaches, equipment manager, Sparky Gonzalez, people who have been in the organization for so long, and you see, tears on some faces, you see just, jubilation on some faces, and then it starts hitting you a little more.
Did you have a moment in the locker room before everything just turned crazy? Were you guys able to have that, or is that just not possible when you win a championship?
Gosh, it all kind of blends together, and it was, we're on the court where, you're obviously celebrating. They go through the trophy presentation. They do all of that, and then they kind of usher you back, as they're kind of getting the locker room ready, putting the plastic tarps up and trying to preserve some of, what's already in there, with the champagne and everything. And then, they kind of, everybody just kind of goes back on their own at some point, as they start trying to usher us back, and then you get back there and there's champagne and everything lined up, and just, I mean, it's just, you haven't seen the locker room like that. Well, we took a little bit of a moment to go back to kind of our coach's office, and we just quick kind of, talked and celebrated, in that sense, congratulating each other. But then it was, hey, get to celebrating with everybody. And so it was just a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was a couple of weeks after that that you and I connected in person at the Christians Working in Sports Conference, our friend Drew Bowe. And we talked about overcoming trials at that event, I think, when we were sharing with the crowd and you were up there with me. We'll get to some of those trials in a bit that you shared. But this past season, you came out of a trial in many ways. So coming out of the trial, just I'm talking about coaching, right? Coming out of that trial, what do you think that did to you in having the gratitude and appreciation for accomplishing a championship, and certainly being a man of God as well, and from a spiritual perspective, that must have been really, I guess, a unique experience going through all that.
Well, first off, Drew and the Uncommon Sports Group, they do an unbelievable job, with not just furthering, Christ's message within the sports community, but connecting people. And had not been for that conference, you and I probably would not have been speaking right now.
That's true.
Just because we didn't have that we wouldn't have had that opportunity to interact and get to know each other a little bit in that short period of time. So it's a big credit to those folks over there. But like you said, I think we all deal with trials. I mean, that goes without saying. Everybody deals with trials. And I think something that has kind of stuck with me over time is that, trials can be big and small, and look big and small to certain people. I've had people come up to me and say, I haven't been through, something that the level of trial that you've been through, when they refer to, and I'm sure we'll talk at some point about, losing my father, obviously in a very public way. And I always like to stop people and say, I don't think that's fair for you to say that, because whatever trial you've been through, it was big in your life, whatever it is. this was just the biggest one in my life. So I don't think it's fair to compare trials. And I say that where, you know, I think we need to celebrate whatever victory, you know, whether it is an NBA championship or it is, you know, hey, getting back on your feet after, you know, losing a job, getting back on your feet after a relationship, you know, might falter, getting back on your feet, you know, after possibly, you know, God forbid, you know, a death in your family or in your close circle. So, you know, just having gone through, I guess you could say when you look at, you know, a recent trial for myself was, you know, hey, I'm no longer the coach of the Minnesota Timberwolves, a team that has meant so much to me and my family throughout my life. You know, that was difficult, but I also understood that there was a bigger plan through that. And I understood that patience was, and it wasn't easy. And I understood that patience was going to be something that if I could find a way to muster up enough patience, and I guess give myself some grace in that time, to help myself not only improve, but help myself to see the things that I felt I did right in Minnesota, it was going to help me in my next stop. And I do think it's helped me in my next, you know, stop, it being Denver in this journey. And it's just been a perfect situation for me. So for me, it was one of those moments that I was able to feel that, you know, because I had some other opportunities that I really liked the year prior, in terms of, you know, going some other places and great, you know, job opportunities. But they just didn't, for some reason, they didn't feel right. And that's a tough thing to say, you know, when you have these jobs that, you know, as we're fortunate in the NBA to, you know, pay you a lot of money. They're offering you a lot of money. They're offering you know, a job in the NBA, which is very hard to get. For me to say, hey, it's not the right time for me. You know, I'm gonna spend time and be a husband, be a father, you know, be involved in my community here in Minnesota. You know, that was difficult, but, you know, I had to have patience, had to have trust in the Lord and trust in the plan, knowing that, you know, something great was coming. And, you know, I knew something great was coming. I didn't know it was going to be this great. And, you know, being with the Denver Nuggets, being in a place that my family really loves, an organization that is very family involved, and then also, you know, reaching the pinnacle of winning the NBA championship. So I feel very grateful for that.
That's good stuff there. He is Ryan Saunders, Denver Nuggets assistant coach. He's joining us here on Sports Spectrum. We're the intersection of sports and faith, Ryan. We talked a lot about winning a title, and we'll get into some of the other trials and things that you've walked through in your journey. But I want to hear about your faith. I want to hear about your walk with Jesus and kind of when that became real to you.
You know, it's something that you know, goes back probably like a lot of folks, you know, to being raised in a Christian household. And you know, I was raised in a home where we went to church. We knew it was a big part of our lives. You know, we also understood that, you know, I have three siblings. It wasn't always every day where we were able to get to church. You know, we didn't have that where, you know, we knew that God wasn't, you know, just judging you based on your attendance. He was judging you based on how you lived your life. And I think that was something my mom and dad did a great job of instilling in us, you know, having empathy, living your life with a purpose, being somebody that treated people with respect, and also stood up for those that maybe were underserved, as well as giving back to the community. So I think, you know, faith, whether I knew it at the time, it was a huge, huge part of how I was raised. I didn't understand quite, you know, I knew it would be a part of my life, but I didn't understand quite what that meant until I got to college. I had a couple shoulder operations while playing at the University of Minnesota. And I had a teammate, you know, during that time. I was in this immobilizer that was really, really uncomfortable and kind of having a little bit of a difficult time. But I had a teammate, would have been my freshman year. Freshman year, invite me to a church. It was called the Upper Room. Actually, it was at the same church that I ended up getting married at, which is ironic because Upper Room is no longer there. It's in a different space. But we ended up getting married in that church. But I remember the song that was playing. I remember, you know, just kind of the whole mood, the whole moment of, you know, being there and, you know, feeling overcome, knowing that, okay, hey, this is a relationship. It's not just something that is there, for it's not just, something for me to attend.
Yeah.
And then you check a box. This is a relationship and how you live your life. And so it's kind of taken off from there. And, I'll be the first one to admit that I am not a perfect Christian by any means. And I have a lot of things I need to improve upon, but I also understand that I've came a long way in a lot of ways. But I'm still a work in progress, which I'd like to think that everybody is, but some people may feel differently.
Well, Ryan, I haven't met a perfect Christian yet. We've done over 1,000 interviews on this show, so that works out well. But do you remember the song? What song was playing when you walked into that church?
Yeah, it's I remember the lyrics. I'm desperate for you.
Okay.
Were the lyrics?
Yes.
And I remember exactly how it was being sung. The woman that was singing it. I want to say it's called "I'm Desperate for You." So yeah.
I know the song. Yeah, I remember. I had just became a Christian around those early 2000s, mid 2000 range, and I remember the song. I'm lost without you. I'm desperate for you.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Exactly. Yeah. That's it.
That's powerful song.
Yeah,
it'll just make you search your own heart. But for you, as you said, it's been, a journey, if you will, and nobody's perfect. But what changed? Did you start to see, as your basketball career started winding down? You went to the University of Minnesota, by the way. We want to let people know that. Yeah. Living in Minnesota, and obviously your dad is a coach, and you went into coaching pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Did you see a change just in your life spiritually after that?
I did. I saw a change. I saw a change in how I approached difficult situations.
Hmm.
How and which, little did I know it was going to prepare me for what I, was my most difficult trial, to date. And that's, losing my father.
Yeah.
And, I think it was all just kind of build up, I guess, to prepare me for that type of moment and be there for those around me, having my mother, having three younger sisters as well. It's that's a lot. And, but during that time too, and I'm sure we'll touch on it, but during that time, we never lost faith. And that's something that I think was really, really important, but also really special because, I think it showed that, I was growing in my relationship and we were growing in our relationship as Christians, as a family.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't mean you're not human either. And so you're not hurting. I mean, your dad, when everybody knew about your dad, he's a legend, obviously a longtime coach with Minnesota and other teams in the NBA, the Pistons. But when he finds out that, he's sick and has this cancer, it was pretty quick from the time that he found out to the time that we lost him. You talk about being prepared. I don't think anybody's ever prepared for a moment like that.
No.
But it's the sustaining is a word I think of. Did you feel that? Like God was able to sustain you in finding all this out and having to walk through it?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I do. I do feel that. And, in the time when we were in that hospital, at the University of Minnesota, which was where he, received a lot of the care after he did get sick, it was, he didn't die from the cancer. It was from complications, during the treatment.
Yeah.
And so that was where things kind of went south for us as a family. But, during that time in the hospital, he was there for, I want to say, close to 40 days. We kept it pretty quiet. It was something we knew we kind of needed a miracle. We didn't want to have to be answering all these questions during that time, see the other, I guess, elements of what that could bring, as he was at the time, still the president of the Minnesota Timberwolves, still the head coach of the Minnesota Timberwolves. So there would have been a lot with that. So we didn't make it public. We only told a select number of people. But in that time, we were able to spend a lot of moments with him in the hospital. And, some moments where it looked like, it was the end. And then, he kind of pulls through, we know he was able to hear us, even though if he wasn't responding to us, we know he was able to hear us. And, that's, I guess us demonstrating faith in that moment. But it just allowed us to spend more time with him, there. And, then it, kind of happened. And that's kind of when I think it shook a lot of people.
Yeah.
And in the sports world, but more particularly in Minnesota. And, there were a lot of reminders of that throughout and the support was really incredible from people within Minnesota, but it was also something that was almost unescapable at that time, which, you want to escape too, but you also understand that people just want to help.
Yeah. I met your dad, I want to say once or twice. He was at ESPN briefly, if I remember correctly. And I was definitely there, and we crossed paths a couple times, nothing too formal, just kind of a passing, hi, how you doing? Glad you're here, coach, type of thing. When you think about his legacy, and he was what, or you were 10 years old, I think, when he was coaching, or 9 years old when he became the head coach initially. Because I was thinking about that time, and when Garnett came to Minnesota kind of with your dad and kind of built up a program that had been on its downtrodden for the first few years of its existence. That's an interesting life to grow up into. And then when he passes, you're an assistant coach at the time, I think, right? If I'm doing my math right. So there's a lot there in terms of this coaching legacy, and I could ask you the question, what was his impact on you like? It's clear that it's a big one, but what were some of your reflections when you thought about, your dad after he had passed, in terms of some of the, just a couple maybe nuggets that that he impressed upon you, certainly being a man of faith being the most important, I would imagine.
Yeah. There's two things that kind of come to mind, and ironically, neither of them involve a basketball. And he had this saying that he always used to bring up, and it's something that you hear it so many times, you don't think much of it, and then somebody they pass away, you can't talk to them in the physical form. You talk to them in other way, you communicate with them in other ways, I like to believe.
Sure.
But he always used to say, he's like, your greatest strength is your greatest weakness if you can't control it. And, I didn't quite get that until I think he passed, and I was able to reflect on that even more. And, I say that in a sense of, I feel one of my greatest strengths is a care factor about anything I do. I care about it. And it just means a lot to me. And, whether that be, I'm talking about no matter what, whether it be this podcast, whether it be, coaching, no matter what it is, I just care. About it. And if I can't control that care can overtake you, losses, all those things that, can come at you, with caring so much. He used to use Kevin Garnett as an example. His greatest strength is his competitiveness. I think it was very clear that we, as fans, and I always idolized Kevin growing up. His competitiveness was so extreme. And then as you get older, you see, there are moments that, hey, maybe you get to technical, you understand technicals are part of the game, but competitiveness maybe takes over and it becomes quote unquote a weakness. If you want to put it that way.
Yeah.
So he used to use that as an example. So that was one thing. And then the other is a story that actually involves the church we went to in Plymouth, Minnesota, growing up. And I remember I was in high school, and for some reason, I want to say my sisters and mother, they were at a dance competition or something. It was just me and him going to church that day. Hmm. And it was across from the church was across from, an apartment complex. And it wasn't a luxurious apartment complex, whatever that may be.
Sure.
So anyways, we go into church and we come out of church and his car was broken into. Window smashed, door pried open, took his, he left his phone, he left a number of things in there. I see that and I'm mad. I'm like, how is that? Like, and he was unbelievably calm. Now I'll never forget how calm he was. And I was like, hey, we got to figure this out. Like, they're probably still over there. Clearly this is something that they were casing us, seeing us go in, looking through the apartment window, whatever. Like, we could probably still find this, stuff. And he just looked at me and, with the most positive voice, and he was such a positive person. He goes, just let it go. He goes, we're lucky enough that we can get new things. For somebody to break into a car while we were in church and know that we were in church in a church parking lot, they are clearly down on their luck more than we can ever know. So what we need to do is pray for them and hope that they're able to get back on their feet.
Wow.
And for me to see that, like, you know, and not just, you know, a dad imparting that, you know, on the son, you know, just with words, but literally living it out in the moment, is something that, you know, just I think about a lot. So, you know, I'm very proud to be his son, very proud, you know, that he is my father, and, you know, will continue to live on through me and my children and my family.
Yeah, that's a wonderful story. I guess not every kid too gets a chance to grow up with a dad who's a coach in the NBA, and the guy that he's coaching is a future Hall of Famer in Kevin Garnett.
Yeah.
I figured you would have at least one story. PG rated. I know that can be tough with KG, but a PG rated maybe story that you remember from Kevin Garnett in the Big Ticket.
Yeah, I mean, I was fortunate. I was so fortunate to be around guys like Kevin, be around guys like Sam Cassell, who actually ended up working with in Washington as an assistant with the Wizards.
Yeah,
who's a close friend to this day. Sam Mitchell, who, you know, I remember sitting and listening to him, you know, tell stories in the locker room. And you know, I worked for Sam for a year after my dad had passed. So I'm really fortunate to have a lot of people in my life who are helped shape. I like to think the man I've become, that, you know, I'm continuing to work, you know, to become a better man, but somebody that I'm proud to be at the moment. You know, one thing about Kevin is he is fiercely loyal. And I was always a very, very quiet kid, and he was always great about, you know, just allowing. I was a ball boy, and, you know, I just kind of came in and did my job, and my dad always told me, hey, do your job, and, you know, you don't need to talk a whole lot, you know, just get in and do what you got to do. And we always, Kevin and I always kind of bonded, even since I was little. And, you know, so as I got older, you know, he was great about, you know, sharing knowledge on every topic you can imagine, you know, some I won't share here, but I mean,
yes.
As a young man,
yeah.
You know, going through a lot of things, he gave me advice on a lot of different things.
For sure.
But then, you know, then as I got to high school, I was about to turn 16. He, you know, he was, well, as I, in high school, he was so great about, you know, he knew I wanted to, you know, was continuing to become a better basketball player, and I want to continue to grow. And he used to like to work out in the summertime, you know, in the middle of the night, basically. So he'd, you know, hey, come down and, you know, rebound for me. And then he'd rebound for me 15 minutes. And, you know, it's a Hall of Famer rebounding for, you know, 15, 16 year old kid that like, he didn't need to do that.
Right.
But he was just fiercely loyal to people that, you know, he connected with. And then my last kind of example of that is when I was about to turn 16, I remember him telling me, and then he told my dad too, which I'll get to, you know, for Ryan's 16th birthday, you know, Rhino, he called, always called me Rhino for Rhino's 16th birthday. I want to give him my aquamarine green Porsche. And
wow.
Me, I'm a 16 year old. And I'm like, this is awesome. Yeah. Like, I'll take that. And so my dad, he's telling me, KG's telling me all about it in the training room. And I'll never forget, my dad walks in and KG's like, hey, Rhino, hey, Flip, I'm gonna give Rhino my Porsche for his birthday next week. And my dad's like, no, you're not. He's like, you're not doing that. And I'm like, why not? And KG's the same thing. He's like, why not? And my dad's like, you're not getting a Porsche for your first car.
Right.
And, you know, in my heart, in that moment, I knew not to, you know, kind of fight back at it. And in my heart, I'm like, oh, he just wants it to be a surprise type of thing. It's, you know, and then next week, great car, got a lot of mileage out of it. I loved it. I get a used Nissan Xterra, which was a great car, great car. But it was not that green Porsche. But to this day, it's a great lesson. I'm really glad that my dad, you know, it was always, you know, whether people want to believe that or not, you know, I know people can have misconceptions about, you know, coaches, kids in a lot of ways. And I know everyone is different, but my dad, he really did believe, you know, hey, you work for everything you get. Mm. So that's something that stuck with me a lot.
Take me to, that's a great story. I love that, by the way. I wonder where that Porsche is today, by the way. That'd be fun to find out. Does KG still have it sitting in, you know, sitting in the in the probably the gigantic garage that he has, or is that thing
Yeah,
long
hopefully it's
gone?
got my name on it,
Someday, Ryan,
but
right? Someday. Let me ask you about, because you eventually become the head coach, which is such a cool thing with Minnesota. I remember I said the wrong year too. I think you were 32 when you became head coach. I think I said 33 at the conference we were at. 32 though, which was the youngest coach at that time, I believe, in the NBA. But then it doesn't work out, and you don't have all the wins, and you don't win a title, and it's suddenly you're not with the franchise that you've been a part of for many years, you know, since you were a little kid, basically. Take me through the lessons learned and maybe a little bit of the positives, even though people will look at it and say, oh, it was a disaster. You didn't win any games, blah, blah, blah. But you said you learned a lot of positives from that time to help you now where you are. So what was that experience like?
And I think anytime you get let go from a job in sports, people, if you didn't win a lot of games, like I the NBA, sports, they go in cycles. Teams, organizations go in cycles. You didn't win a lot of games, people are going to say that's a failure. To me, that was not a failure, because what I was brought in there during that time for a specific reason. And people who I feel are not believers will never understand that. But there were a lot of things away from the court that I felt very not proud, but I felt that I was needed to be a part of players' lives, people within the organization, their lives. I felt, we had a ton of injuries during that time. I grew up in a no excuse household. But reality is reality too, and we had a ton of injuries at that time. It really helped shape me in understanding that sometimes things are out of your control. Sometimes, people might not have the same, I guess, mindset or goal or plan as you may have. And you got to understand that maybe you need to do a better job setting boundaries, but you also need to do a better job of not just, being a partner and accepting things, but also pushing back when the time is right. I learned that, but I also, as I got around the Nuggets, I learned too, we weren't that far off in terms of the approach. It just didn't translate, in ways that, people would judge, success in sports. So to me, it was not a failure. To me, it was a period of player development. And I think you can look now at, a lot of guys who have developed in the right way. And my dad always had a great line. He said, "You can't develop and win at the same time." And I think that's a very truthful statement, in a sense of, if you're really developing for the future, and you're trying to develop your young players, they're going to need playing time. And with that comes, learning experiences, growing pains, and plenty of things I could have done a lot better. But plenty of things I'm very proud of, having been in Minnesota, and I'm happy that, they have some good things going. I'm was good to see a lot of those guys during the playoff run, not just on the court, but people within that organization that I still keep in touch with. So there were a lot of lessons learned, some negative, but a lot of positive.
Yeah, it probably changed your definition of success, I would imagine, a little bit too, because you could win a title and everybody's going to say, okay, Ryan Saunders, NBA champion coach. But I've talked to a lot of people where they say, man, if success is defined by wins and losses, I obviously that's what the gauge is in terms of you keeping a job. You need results. But from a long-term perspective, or even from an off-the-court perspective, I would imagine your definition of success is a little different.
Oh, definitely. And success, I think, progress is a word I'd rather use. Because if you're progressing, each day, that's going to lead to ultimate success, whatever that looks like, and however you define
And in your
that.
faith too, right,
And
Ryan? In your faith too.
you're exactly, and that's right where I was going, in the sense of, my year off, I ended up taking a year off and just being a dad, being a husband, which was great in Minnesota, difficult in some ways, but it was great where I was able to, one, get perspective, but I was also able to progress and find the value in progressing, and the process of that on a daily basis. And I picked, four categories for myself: faith, family, finances, which, and when I say finances, I equate that to my job. So becoming better in my job. So I picked four Fs, and then fitness, becoming, being somebody who wanted to get in, better shape and both mentally and physically. But, with that, I tried to attack all those areas on a daily basis, and find ways to, whether it be, hey, finish the Bible in a year, which I was able to do in that time. Able to, hey, I got an hour of present time with my fam with my kids, where there's nothing else. It ended up turning into more than 1 hour, because I learned very quickly, when you're not working in the NBA and you can't give people jobs, your phone doesn't ring as much, which is really weird.
Yes,
So,
yes.
yeah, there were some days where that phone didn't come off the charger. So, which is funny,
Yeah, yeah.
but then, just the progress aspect of it all is something that I learned to find value in.
Yeah, that's good. I like those Fs. Those are all important Fs. Let me ask you, as we wind down, the last question about that first F, the faith, right? What are you learning from God now, where you've kind of had this perspective on seeing the journey he's taken you on, and the coaching and the losses, both personally with family members and your father, but also losses on the court, but even the wins now. What's the lesson God is teaching you right now when you look at your life?
Just being steadfast in a belief, in the belief that things will work out the way he wants them to work out. And it's not going to be on our timeline. The way that we or in a way that we see them working out. I say that in a sense of, I can you can look and I believe in goal setting. I think it's really, really important, but I also think it's important to understand that if you set your goals high, obviously, you want to attain them. You want to, you want to get to that point. If you really want to attain those goals, you're going to have to endure a lot of trials, and it's just about, not giving up and not giving up on your faith. I say that in this, with leading you with this. I You asked me to start this conversation about, what it felt like to win an NBA championship, and what when it kind of hits you. My wife, my now wife, we're going to be celebrating 6 years this coming weekend here. We have two beautiful kids, 4-year-old, 2-year-old. We have a great marriage. We built a great life that we're very proud of. She was somebody that I met in college. She was a much smarter woman then, didn't want to date me in college. She probably knew I needed a little bit of time. But then, as adult life kind of got going, we reconnected a little bit when I moved back to Minnesota. But in that time, I had to wear her down a little bit. Well, when she agreed to go out with me was basically a week after my dad had passed. And to me, that was my dad, kind of pushing her, saying, hey, this is you gotta go save him. We ended up getting married, and on one of our first dates, she asked me what one of my lifelong career goals is. And I told her early on, I knew she was the one. I told her early on, I said, I want to look up in the stands and see you after winning an NBA championship. And I was able to do that. And the path wasn't one that was an ultimate goal of mine now. Path wasn't one that I thought I'd ever be able to kind of navigate my way through, but with faith, I was able to. And and here I stand, and in a way that I feel very, very blessed and grateful for.
That's a great story. Her name's Haley, right?
Haley,
Yeah, she's the real MVP, right? As Kevin
Oh,
Durant once said.
it's unbelievable what people don't understand, what wives, what husbands, what kids, whatever, any family member, what they give up. And I understand, we see the ESPN broadcast and the nice outfits and everything, and we see the money and the nice cars, but there is a lot given up too. So with that, the families give up a lot. So in the off season, you try to, you really do try to spend time, be present, and create memories with them.
Yeah, that's
Which we're
awesome.
about to go get some ice cream, so
There you
that'll
go.
be a
That's a good
memory.
memory right there. Hopefully it's maybe a little chocolate chip cookie dough, Ryan. What are you getting if you're getting ice
Well,
cream?
you know the area a little bit, Little Man Ice Cream out here.
Okay, yeah. Yeah.
Little man ice cream. So great salted salted Oreo or salted peanut butter cup.
Oh my. Yeah.
So we're big fans.
Yeah. Well, I might need to cut this interview short so I can go get some ice cream too, Ryan.
There you go. There you go.
Hey man, thanks for your time. Thanks so much for
Yeah,
doing this.
absolutely, Dan.
And I'm glad we're connected, and I hope we can
For
stay
sure.
connected, and hopefully I'll have you back on the show soon.
Let's do it again.
All right.
All right. Thanks, Jason.
And many thanks to Ryan Saunders for being our guest here on Sports Spectrum, 2023 NBA champion with the Denver Nuggets. It'll be interesting to see how the Nuggets are able to approach next season, which is coming very soon, as far as defending the title. It's hard to win back-to-back titles in any sport, and now you're the hunted, right? Everybody's coming after you and understands the talents that are Jokic and Michael Porter Jr. and Jamal Murray and that team. That's if they stay healthy, they're going to be right in the mix again. I mean, how do you pick against Denver next year, going into the season? It'll be a lot of fun to see Ryan Saunders on the sidelines as an assistant coach with Michael Malone and getting ready for another season. We wish him nothing but the best. And I'm thankful that he was able to share the stories that he shared, particularly the memories about his dad, the lessons learned from his father, Flip Saunders. How about the Kevin Garnett story? That was a lot of fun. And then steadfastness and staying steadfast in the journey that God has brought him on, and having that moment looking up in the stands when he wins the NBA title and seeing his wife Haley, the real MVP, if you will, staring back down at him. So we wish Ryan nothing but the best, and we continue to root for him now. If you're watching an NBA game and you see the Nuggets on, just look for Ryan Saunders on the sidelines, and you know it's a guy that you can root for upcoming in this NBA season. So we appreciate Ryan very much, and we thank you as well for tuning in to Sports Spectrum. You can find us at our website, sportspectrum.com. And of course, whatever app you're listening to this podcast on, if you want to click that subscribe button so that you don't miss any more episodes and conversations like today's with Ryan Saunders. It's the month of September. We got some great conversations you may have missed, including Hall of Famer Donnie Schell, including former baseball pitcher Storm Davis. We had Mike Fury on, the longtime NFL wide receiver, now coach. There's some amazing conversations with coaches and players and former players. This is what we do, keeping Jesus in the sports conversation. And hopefully you can use this podcast, our stories, anything that we do as a tool, as a resource to share Jesus with someone else. We thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you next time for another episode right here on Sports Spectrum. Have a great rest of your day, and please do stay safe.